session number 9422, reel 11.
Harold Haywood, Reel 11. Now, you were in the headquarters during this period as the runner, the colonel's personal runner. Mm. Could you tell me what you knew about the planned attack on September 3rd and 4th on Guillemont? What sort of things you heard which perhaps you wouldn't have heard if you'd remained with your platoon?
That is so. I wouldn't, because battalion headquarters was some distance behind the attacking platoons. Who had been told what to have to do and how far they were to go and what they could expect in front of them. I as just a headquarters person, didn't affect me. All I knew was the direction they went, so that if I had to be employed as a runner, then I would know where to set out and which direction to take. I remember there were very few trees. I thought, well, now I must try and pick up the spots so as to, I know where they've gone over, the direction, but they'd sort of gone out of sight, whether over a hill, little hill or what, I don't know. But I did know generally what how to set out to go in the normal expected way to catch up with them.
Was there a bombardment before the attack was launched?
Yes.
What can you remember of that?
Very little, because that was behind us. Very little. You see, it would be the. I did see field guns. Now I forget now whether I've heard about it or whether I saw about it. Field guns in action. You know, firing over open sights. Attlee won his MC when he was an artillery officer. The PM.
But could you see the results of the British bombardment?
No,
you didn't look over the top or anything?
No, except that the ground was cut up, as I say. It was like, it doubtless had been field land, you know, or common land, but it looked just like a ploughed field in the wintertime.
What about the Germans? Did they launch, was there a counter bombardment?
No, there was. Yeah, well, as I say, yes, there was a bombardment, and of course they knew the precise range for the trench that our battalion headquarters remained in. They'd occupied it, so it was on their maps, and they were shelling it with HE all along, just as though they'd got a water hose spraying up and along a border. And
this was during the attack or before the attack?
This was after the attack. Later on, after the attack. Doubtless they may have thought that the trench from which our battalion set off from would probably have now been occupied by support troops ready to go through our battalion if the Germans had retreated so far. The first attacking force would of course had casualties, would have been exhausted, and as I showed you in that book, another battalion of the brigade would go through them to take the German support line.
What was it like in this trench during this bombardment by the Germans? What can you remember about it?
Well, it was a very it wasn't a real German how shall I say, quiet time trench. It was just one dugout to take off from to give some protection. But it wasn't like the trenches we had known at ours, for instance, which were then 6 feet deep. You could walk along, nothing showing.
But what about this bombardment? How did that affect you in the trench?
Well... Well, they didn't use HE. They just used shrapnel, but they just as I say, as though it was a hose going along the trench. They were right over the top. I mean, they weren't 30 yards that way and 30 yards that way. They weren't 10 yards that way and 10 yards that way. They were just spraying the trench with shrapnel.
Did it cause many casualties?
Yes, well, just in the small sector that we were in, that's to say, near the colonel's dugout, or maybe there were the headquarters staff, and it was causing casualties. In fact, there are on one of them, there'd been quite a number of shrapnel shells going over, but this one, I suppose, about the 12th, which was near to where we were, it burst right overhead, and I didn't know at the time, but it happened that I was four people one side of me and four people the other, including the regimental sergeant major, and this particular shell came over and knocked out eight of the group of nine, knocked out eight, and I happened to be by chance the middle one, and I wasn't hit at all, but several of them were hit in many places, being shrapnel. And of the eight people who happened to be there, I didn't know it was eight till then, this included the sergeant major, and I happened, quite by chance, to be standing next to him, and he fell on me, because a piece of shrapnel had got into the nape of his neck, and of course a lot of bleeding. So that meant that I looked around, and I was only a private, but I thought, well, it's up to me to go and tell the colonel about these casualties, and it was with some apologies I did say that I'm bringing not good news again, sir. And he said, well, what is it? I said, I'm afraid you've lost eight of your staff just outside. I said, it includes the regimental sergeant major Healy. I said, he's killed. The others have all badly wounded, some of them in many places.
What was his reaction?
He said, well, you've just got to accept that. But there he was, you know, with instead of his immediate close staff, he only had one or two people, which included one of the orderly room clerks, Arthur Bacon. And late that night, that is to say, somewhere about 11 o'clock.
Oh, before we go on to that, when the battalion went over the top, like this, leaving behind, of course, the headquarters, what was the sort of atmosphere in the headquarters? You know, were people optimistic? Were they worried?
It was the thing we'd been led to expect. You know, you see, two sections would go over, perhaps from a platoon, leaving two behind with the platoon officer, perhaps. Two platoons would go over, leaving the company commander behind with two platoons. Two companies might go over, with leaving behind the colonel and two companies, could be. And then behind them there would be the supporting battalion of the brigade, and behind them, in larger degree, if the circumstances demanded it, would be another brigade, perhaps a mile behind, who would go through, and if those troops in German side of themselves had made a good breakthrough, they would put this reserve battalion through, because for the first perhaps mile they'd have nothing to do except get over there, and they'd start to do their fighting a mile away from where they were.
So that was the organisation of the attack. But would at their headquarters, would they know what was happening?
No. No, you might have thought, well, why didn't the company commanders take the signallers and align with them? They may have done so, but as I've told you about the one of Highwood, the shelling was going on, and the line could easily get broken or the signaller killed.
So the colonel and the battalion headquarters wouldn't have much idea of what was going on?
He'd no idea. The only idea was, the negative idea was, that the troops hadn't come back and they'd gone out of sight, which in itself was a piece of negative good news, because we didn't know how far they'd won, what ground they'd won.
Now, you say at 11 o'clock you and an orderly were given the task when I interrupted you. Could you continue? What were you sent to do?
Yes, well, one of the orderly room clerks who really hadn't had any soldier training at all outside the orderly room as the colonel's personal assistant, Colonel Archer, she said to me, said, well, I want you, and then you can take Bacon with you, to go out and see if you can find the battalion. And so I set out in the direction that the battalion had gone, in darkness, in about 4 hours or 5 hours of darkness, to see if I could get in touch with the battalion and find out from the different officers along the line what their situation was vis-a-vis the enemy, to bring back verbally to Colonel Archery my verbal what I'd passed on. Doubtless, of course, if they'd seen me come up, they would have written a message for me to take back if I'd contacted them. But of course, I didn't know. I might very well have been walking into German lines, where there'd been a gap and the Germans were still there. Or alternatively, it might have been our fellows thinking that the Germans would come over in a night counterattack to get them in the rear. So we were rather at a not very pleasant position. I know I carried my rifle loaded and in my hand, ready to fire at a moment's notice. I haven't thought till now it might have been one of our people that I'd walked into who'd fired, thinking that we were German, and fired at me, and I probably would have fired back thinking they were Germans. It didn't happen though, and I did. I said we went walking all the night. We didn't stop, kept on having to jump over trenches and communication trenches.
Did you know where you were at all?
No, except that I thought we were working towards where the battalion had gone and disappeared. And I said, I think we better turn back now. And
did you see any other troops at all?
None at all. I didn't see one or hear one the whole of that night. It was an eerie experience, being, out on your own, and you didn't know whether you had friends in front of you or around you, or the enemy.
Was it difficult land to cross? I mean, was it well shelled, the area you were in?
Well, I think I've said that the the ground was very much cut up, and of course there were the trenches that the Germans that we'd captured, and of course were behind our our troops, and the such Germans who'd been there. Been captured would have been taken back to the prisoner of war camp.
Was it tiring ground to get across?
Well, I didn't think of that. After all, I'd been just lying about all the daytime, or sitting about, or standing about. I may have taken a message from the battalion to brigade.
What was the atmosphere like on the battlefield at night? Was there still a lot of firing going on, or was it?
No, I hadn't thought of that. I didn't think of it at the time. You've just put a point to me that, of course, if the Germans were making a night counterattack, I would have the sound of their the sound of their firing the rifles would have told me about the distance that they were away, but I, to the best of my knowledge and belief, I heard nothing. It was just a question of trying to get through barbed wire that hadn't been cut and jump over trenches, you know, I was aware of the fact that my own rifle was loaded, one up the spout, and I could have well have fallen into a trench and, you know, wounded myself.
What happened in the end?
Well, when the sun started to rise, of course, and we were walking about as though we were in a park, I decided it was sensible to get back, at least to tell the colonel the negative information that we hadn't caught up with the battalion. And I told the colonel, I said, well, I really don't know how far in the what radius I'd walked, because we'd been with night time, we might have been all over the place. Suffice to say that we didn't meet anyone, Germans or our own troops. Certain.
Did you have any trouble finding your way back to the colonel?
Well, no. I'd heard a story that if you set out in the dark or in a snowstorm, and start walking, you will come back eventually to the place you started from, provided there is nothing to interfere with that doing. You walk in a circle, in other words. Now, at about 5 in the morning, the colonel said, well, we'll have some breakfast, have something to eat, then we'll go off and see whether we can find the battalion. Which, of course, wasn't difficult. He could see ahead, and could see that there were no German troops to walk through to get to them or anything like that. And eventually, it only took us about perhaps half an hour. We may have sheltered a bit, you know, to avoid being hit by shells, because the Germans doubtless would have expected reinforcements to the British to be coming up.
So the problem during the night had just been that you couldn't see, and the problem was removed at daytime. What happened when you got to the battalion? What situation were they in?
Yes, well, the colonel said, well, he said, I see, this looks our battalion, but not only were there other brigade units mixed up with our chaps, whom of course we didn't recognise by face, but we knew that their regimental badge, but also there were units, odd chaps here and there, with battalion names on that weren't in our division. So mixed up had people become. But there they were in a line, and they of course had rested during the night. And
were the Germans?
Well, we did learn the Germans had not made a night counterattack. They had us. Our chaps had had a rest.
So where were they in relation to the British line?
Not to be seen, because I was in the British line, and I was walking about. Our chaps were in small trenches which they dug with their trenching tools.
They were new trenches, were they? They weren't old German ones.
My recollection is that our chaps had made themselves, because Germans wouldn't necessarily provide trenches for us to be comfortable in, and we just used our trenching tool, you know, just to give some cover, particularly as that they were lying down, and you get the earth out of, you'd have about 3 yards there, and you dig that out where you might only go down 2 feet, but at least you could lie down, and what you've got out acted as some protection if the Germans started to fire, whereas if you hadn't got that earth thrown up, they could hit you easily.
So what happened next? You were now in the front.
Yes,
line.
Well, I walked on to find my two friends. One I found, and he was in a bad way because a shell had burst near him, and he was pretty badly shell struck, and he couldn't tell me very much about the other mutual friends. And but I did find a group of the people in the same platoon I'd been for over a year, over 2 years, and that was something to see a group of them together that I could chaff and ask. I was standing up, so certainly there weren't any Germans within sight of me eastward, and I asked about Howell. That's the one I showed you, you know, his photograph. They said, well, now, when we were going over, the Germans were not only firing at us with their rifles and the machine guns, but also with artillery. And one shell dropped, and it dropped right in front of where we were, and Howell was bedded in it. He said, in fact, we didn't know till after when he told us that the whole of our half platoon ran over him with soil, you know, he got earth thrown right over. So he was in a, and I met him. Yes, I think I met him. He was, but he was in a poor way. He was, you can well understand.
What was their morale like? Cause this is the second big attack they've been
The thing which hit me first, before I picked out my own particular friends in the section, was to see nearly all, it seemed to me that every non-commissioned officer in my company had been killed. I looked around, no matter where I looked, that way or that way, there was a platoon sergeant killed, or a corporal killed. Those were the days when rank was distinguished by marks on the arm, stripes or a crown, and the Germans, I feel certain, had got a corps of people trained probably to look through good field glasses, Zeiss glasses or something like that, to pick out these people purposely and look for them and shoot at them.
Did that affect morale, all these casualties amongst them?
Oddly, it, I wasn't long enough with them to have long conversations, but I was attached to the colonel, to be getting, keeping, being along with him in case he wanted to send messages but he was in conversation with the one officer remaining that we could see along a line perhaps of a quarter of a mile in extent of our battalion, and so Lieutenant Fitzgerald was able to tell the colonel just what he knew of the situation as it was up and down the line, and then the right hand company of our battalion heard that the colonel had come up, and they sent a message through to say that there was a big gap on their right which they couldn't spread out to cover, and they were afraid of Germans getting in between us and the next troops on their right, whom they didn't know how far away they were. So the colonel said to me, he said you're to go, Hayward, and find out what the how far away, how big the gap is, how far away the next troops on the right are. He said, I think they're French, and find out what their dispositions are, whether they're going to retire, whether they're going got another planned attack, but can this gap be filled? And of course it might have happened, the French might have been so badly knocked about, their left hand battalion, that there might have been no NCOs to know what to do. But I was to get in, if I could, get in touch with an officer and learn from him, for the colonel's information, what the next move, as far as he knew, was to take place, because it really was a serious position to have this gap of about at least 200 yards, and it was a bit of a rise, and you couldn't see the other side. What was going on, because we could have been enfiladed, come in behind.
How did you go about this mission then?
Well, I just said he was telling me that, and I said, "Yes, sir." And all, that's all I did. I didn't go like to all I did was just draw my rifle in like that, and said, "I said yes, sir," wondering whether my third form French would carry me out if it was a French troops, and I got a bullet straight away, and I was as near to the old man as I am to you. The shot had come from where I was standing. I was looking towards the rear. The colonel was facing the way the Germans were, and I was standing there, you know, listening to what he was saying. And I was hit by a bullet which came up from the captured German trenches. And no doubt what it was that a German had been left behind in one of their deep dugouts which hadn't been bombed, and come up and seen the colonel and let fly at the colonel. And of course, as soon as that had happened, he would walk on down through towards our reserve lines and given himself up as a prisoner of war. Nobody would have known.
So you never actually got started at all on this mission? You never actually left?
I hadn't made a step.
Where were you wounded, and what had happened?
Well, actually, I was wounded in the scrotum. The bullet, which had come up off the ground and carried dirt with it, went through a tin which I'd got cigarettes in, and went through me. And the bullet itself actually protruded from my left haunch. It had entered in my right low side, gone through the crotch, and came out just poking out of my left haunch.
So it was a serious wound. How were you treated in the initial, you know?
Well, in the initial thing, this I found out after I'd been carried by Lieutenant Fitz, whatever his name, Fitz, to the dugout that the colonel had decided to make his headquarters. It was a German engineer's dugout with tools and all like that. But at least it was a central point, and people would know where to go if they wanted to get in touch with the colonel, that it was there. And of course, he was able to sit down and write any reports he wished to. And of course, our signallers could lay a telephone wire to this place, and he could be able to talk along the line as well as back to brigade when the lines were fixed up, as at this. If it had been bad weather, he was sheltered from the rain, and he could conduct operations from there.
Were you still conscious at this time?
Oh, yes, 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 I never lost consciousness.
Were you in great pain?
No, I wasn't, oddly enough, not then, no.
So you were laid in the dugout. Did you receive any first aid at this time?
The only thing was that Lieutenant Fitz, he did put my field dressing on me. And he reassured me that nature provided, like it provides two eyes, it also that I'm now a father. And but of course then he had to go back because to see that his machine guns were all set up well, and he was accepting for Captain Colt, who was second in command to Colonel Archer Shee.